Hello, everybody, and welcome into episode number 228 of the We Don't Know Either podcast. I'm Lindsay.
I'm Nick.
I'm Michael.
I'm Samantha.
Samantha, welcome back.
Hey. Old pro now.
She's a seasoned vet.
2 weeks in a row of podcasts.
Right? Yeah. It's kind of a big deal.
And very shortly here, I'm going to be gone. So if you just want to stay on permanently, that would be wonderful.
Come back to DC.
The psycho look in Lindsay's eyes just then is like, please, God, stay.
Psycho look, normal look, whatever.
All of the above.
I've only ever seen that face on her when her burrito bowl with guacamole comes out.
Yeah.
Without guacamole?
With guacamole.
You know, I've seen it without guacamole. Okay. It's much scarier.
I can confirm.
Well, there's anger there is the problem.
Rage. Blinding rage. Yeah. But yeah, it's never a bad thing to know that you like guacamole. But yeah, let's jump right into the facts today, because I know we have a lot of them. And I know that we're going to want to pick Samantha's brain here at the end, because her job is very cool and she's a badass.
Absolutely.
Okay, so Michael, you kicked it off last week. Nick, why don't you start us?
Okay, my interesting fact. So, as we all hopefully know at this point, we'll start off with an easy question. We'll build up to the hard. How many time zones are there in the United States?
Five?
Five, I want to say.
No.
Or wait, six?
It depends if Alaska and Hawaii are on the same one.
Oh. Eastern, Central, Mountain. What's Western called?
Pacific.
Well, oh, yeah, Pacific.
What are the
about
main
that.
Ones?
That's four.
And then there's five.
Yeah, it's Hawaii, and I think Alaska covers two. So, I think it is technically six, but I was going for four. I was going for the continental United States.
Okay, you need to be very, very specific in your trivia asking questions.
You're absolutely right.
Also, I forgot what Pacific that word was. I almost said Western. Oh, my goodness. Give me that guac. Embarrassing. All right, keep going.
All right, so there are four continental time zones in the United States. We went through them: Eastern, Central, Mountain, and Pacific. That was adopted in 1883.
Right.
Okay.
Good times.
Prior to 1883, how many time zones were in the United States?
Oh.
I feel like this is some like National Treasure stuff. Don't they talk about that? Anyone?
They talk about
anyone? Where's
daylight
Nicolas,
savings time.
Where's Nicolas Cage when you need
them? They talk about daylight
that
savings
time. That is daylight savings time.
Oh, shoot.
Those are different things. But I think there's a couple states that don't have daylight savings time, if I'm not mistaken. Arizona, I don't think, does daylight savings.
All right, let's bounce back.
Okay. So, thank you for focusing me.
My bad.
How many time zones in the United States prior to the 1883 adoption of the four as we know it?
I'm going to say one.
Me too. One.
Just one?
Just one.
So it was the same time in California as it was in...
That's how China does it.
Okay.
I mean, my guess, my gut would be one. Yeah. Because if they're adding time zones in 1883, that means they're... Yeah. Unless they're subtracting from and they just had a million go the other way.
There were 300 time zones in the United States. Each major city or whatever... city. I don't know how they defined what the level was of major or not, but there were roughly 300 cities that each had their own time zones, and they all based it upon like the height of the sun in the sky was noon, and they moved it like left and right. So the time zones would change constantly throughout the year, and it would change 300 different times in 300 different cities. The reason they adopted the four time zones was strictly because of train schedules. Because it would be impossible to schedule a train arrival or a train departure and the schedules across the board. So it was the proliferation of the train track and the railroad system in the United States that required there to be like a standardized time zone.
Wow. I was thinking back to last week when we were saying the woman who was born closer to the Constitution.
Two weeks ago, yeah.
Yeah, she was born closer to the start of time itself. Right. than
yes.
today's. This woman last week we talked about, she was born in what, 1900? She was closer in age to when the Constitution was written versus
when
today.
It was signed
or when it was
to
signed.
Today. Her birthday,
oh, wow.
The day of her birth was closer to the signing of the Constitution than it was to right now.
Right. Wow. So she was closer by what, a decade?
It was like 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. To that than.
Than to now.
Yeah. Mind blown.
Right?
The concept of time itself. Whoa.
Right.
We're getting trippy.
There's a lot of those. Like Cleopatra was born closer to now than to the building of the pyramids.
That's so crazy.
Yeah.
Man, I just...
Betty White is older than sliced bread.
Right.
I'm just so floored of thinking of how anyone would do anything without just having time.
A standardized time, right?
I guess maybe that's how they didn't need all of
that. But when you don't have the mass transportation,
you're
localized to your own area. So
or
your
communication.
Time, your time's all that matters.
Yeah.
And it still is for me.
My time is all that should matter for everybody.
Kidding.
Cool. Okay, so I guess I'll go next.
Okay.
So dinosaurs.
Love them.
Okay.
Yeah, we're all a fan of dinosaurs.
Yeah. I am very pro Jurassic Park.
Yeah. So I think that this has been one of those things that should have been obvious, but not something that you ever thought about, like, you know, time existing. So when all these dinosaur bones and fossils were found, mm-hmm. who owns them? Right? It's not really a finder's keepers kind of law, right?
It should be. It absolutely should be.
Right? I feel like... Yeah,
but if you're on somebody else's land...
Yeah, I would say it is owned by... I mean, first off, possession is 9/10 of the law. But it would be owned by whoever's land it's found on, unless there's some sort of agreement arranged beforehand.
See, that right. I think it has to do with mineral rights. Just because you own the land doesn't mean you own everything underneath it.
No, actually, that's the wrong definition of mineral rights. Because you own the land, you own everything underneath of it. You can sell the mineral rights of your land without actually selling ownership of the land.
Which is what I'm saying, is those are two different things. So if you have sold the mineral rights to your land, but you still own the land, if fossils are dug up, it's whoever owns the mineral rights. It's not. I'm
okay, sure. You're nitpicking. I see how you're trying to work this backwards in order to get you to be right from the beginning.
This is my intention from the beginning.
Yes.
I have no idea what you're talking about, Nick. I definitely wasn't trying to backtrack there.
No, but that's definitely. I mean, I agree with you. I think it's whoever owns the land, unless you have reached some sort of agreement ahead of time. So if it's like an archaeologist says, "Hey, Michael, I think there are bones in your backyard. I would like to pay you $10,000 for the right to dig and keep any dinosaur bones I find out in your backyard." And you're like, "I live in Arlington. You can dig whatever you want. You're never going to find anything." And then I find a like complete T-Rex skeleton there. That's mine now. I paid the $10,000 for it. Like, exactly. I own that.
You would think, which is actually a perfect segue into my question.
Well, that's why we started talking about it in the first place.
No, but... You said specifically T-Rex that you found it,
okay.
right? So have you heard of the T-Rex named Sue?
Yes.
I have not.
Yeah, what? It's...
Yes.
I said yes.
What do you know about Sue?
Oh, yeah. Well, here, this is my one Sue fact. So Sue, apparently, they say had gout, and I know that because I had gout a few years ago. Take that.
Too much of a decadent lifestyle.
Right.
Too much filet mignon and brandy at dinner.
So me and a dinosaur apparently had something in common.
I was going to say, wow.
I'm down with it.
So. I didn't know that dinosaurs could get gout.
Hey, I didn't know
I'm not 100% sure what gout is, so yeah. Why? Of course dinosaurs can get gout.
I think it was me liking too much booze in college.
Yeah,
that's
a lot of it.
Is it a buildup of acid in the joints? Am I getting that right?
Acid. There you go.
Oh, look at that.
All right.
That gout doesn't have anything to do with my fact, but interesting.
What is it where the person has like the big lump on their neck?
Goiters.
That's a goiter. Okay, that's totally different.
Okay, so... My fact is related to Sue the dinosaur. It's the T-Rex was the largest, most complete Tyrannosaurus Rex skeleton ever found, period. 90% of the bones are there. So how much did it sell for an auction?
Well,
and this is also the most expensive fossil, dinosaur fossil.
Can we answer the first question first? Who owns, or is that still coming later?
That's
well, the person
after
that
the...
buys it is the person that owns
well,
it.
Well, I mean, like,
the person who sold it owned it in the first place.
If you find the skeleton, who owns that? Are we still coming to that?
We're going to come back around to it once you give me the price.
Okay.
Okay.
Put a nice little bow tie on this dinosaur venture that we're going on.
$5 million.
$5 million? $5 million?
I was going $3 mil.
See, I was going to say like $500,000.
Whoa, none of you guys really value the dinosaurs. $7.6 million.
Okay.
$7.6 million, so that's the fact. Currently, Sue resides in the field. My goodness. She's in Chicago. Anyway, she's in Chicago. So this it's on Indian land, or Native American land, the Black Hills Institute. They got permission from the owner to go and dig, found a skeleton, paid him off, and then the FBI was like, we're going to go take it from the Black Hills Institute and take it back because it's technically government property. And so
it's technically not government property, though, isn't it?
Because they own the Native American Reserve.
The government doesn't own the Native American Reserve. The Native Americans own the Native American Reserve.
It's part of the Department of the Interior thing. I can show you right here.
Oh, no,
I believe
you.
In 1992, the FBI and the South Dakota National Guard raided the site where the Black Hills Institute had been cleaning the bones and seized the fossil. So the FBI did a raid to stop these.
I can't think of a single other time in the history of this country where the U.S. government has taken stuff from the Native Americans.
Yeah, nothing's coming to mind.
Yeah, they transferred the remains to the South Dakota School of Mines and Technology. There was a big, huge, lengthy trial, and the court decided that Maurice Williams, who originally found them, retained the ownership because all these other things, the real property. But whole big thing about who discovers dinosaurs and finders keepers kind of applied, but also kind of didn't.
Yeah, no, but that's so the guy, the archaeologist, paid the Native Americans to go dig on their land, found the thing,
right,
and then was nice enough to like give it to the institute on the Native American land to get it cleaned and whatever when he was going to sell it off to somebody else,
right?
Which they're like, hey, you found it on our land. Let us keep it in the museum for a little while, and then you can do whatever you want with it. Then he sold it, and then the U.S. government comes in and takes it.
Yeah.
It sounds like we were all a little bit right,
yeah,
but not the whole way there.
It's at the Field Museum in Chicago, if you wanted to go see Sue. And this is another
who currently owns it?
The Field Museum. They raised the funds to buy it at auction.
Wait, so the government seized it and then immediately put it up for auction?
Yeah. So the
and sold it for $7.6 million.
So
that's just straight robbery.
Yeah.
So
and then they taxed the transaction.
You know, so, I got to tell you, the guy that stole the stereo out of my car and then took it to the pawn shop, same thing.
Right, exactly the same thing.
So just to clarify, so the property that the fossil had been found on was held in trust by the United States Department of the Interior.
Okay.
Just to be clear. And the owner gave permission to the Black Hills Institute who found it. So
the person who found it gave permission.
Or
the
people who found it paid the owner of the land $5,000, and so then Williams, the owner of the land,
the trustee of the land.
No,
because the owners.
If the land is held in trust by the U.S. government, then they are the owner. The trustee would then be the people living on the land.
This is listing him as owner in all of the things that I read.
Okay.
But the U.S. government is saying that the property that had the fossil had been found within the land held by the United States Department of the Interior. So the land technically belonged to the government. And that's what they're saying. But the point is, the guy eventually got paid.
Okay. Okay. That's the important part. The guy eventually got paid. Wait, which guy?
The Maurice Williams. This is a whole big court case.
Maurice Williams, the guy who found it.
Yeah, I did a really bad job. I got really excited, and I'm really sorry.
No, it's a good fact. So let me give you this example. If I were to get hit by a bus tomorrow, Asher would inherit my stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Sarah, my wife, would then be the trustee
until he turns
18. The stuff would be held in trust in Asher. He would be the quote unquote owner, but Sarah would then be the trustee. So it sounds to me like the U.S. government is the owner, but the Native Americans are the trustees who live on the land and care for the land and essentially are in charge of the land. And then the archaeologist, Maurice, went to the
trustees
and said, I'd like to use the land. I'd like to give you some money for it. I'd like to do all this other stuff. Then found the thing, at which point the owner came back and went, no, that's mine.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
So the Black Hills Institute paid what they thought was for the fossil, and they paid him $5,000 for the whole fossil.
Uh-huh.
And then the owner, I'm using that in quotes, of the land, Williams, claimed that the money had not been for the sale of the fossil, but he'd only allowed them to remove and clean the fossil for a later sale.
Right.
But either way, the government came in and raided, and I just had this really kind of hilarious vision of these big FBI, you know, SWAT teams coming.
Yeah, the blue jackets with the yellow letters on the back.
Coming in and like, stick them up, but it's just a fossil.
Right. They're like carting off like big giant bones over their shoulders, like, this is mine now.
Yeah, that was what I was picturing.
Put down the brush.
Yeah, right. And there's still a lot of fossil disputes happening. There's a big one that's dueling dinosaurs, and they're frozen in time sand actually fighting.
Oh, really?
And they're currently just in storage because the guy that, you know, claims ownership that wants to sell them, they're not fetching enough on auction, and a lot of museums are like, well, we can't really pay for all of this, and it's a whole big thing. But anyway, give people their dinosaurs. And I'm sorry that was a really roundabout.
I just, in my head, I picture like the opening credits to the Flintstones. Like they pull up in the car and they like put the big like rack of ribs on the side of it. And then it's just, except for it's the FBI van and they just put the big bones right on the side of it.
The
over.
FBI.
Yeah.
You cool. Beat me to it.
All right. Well, I'm sorry about that. I tried and I read a lot and it all got jumbled, but we're moving on.
Okay.
Samantha, you want to go here?
All right, here we go. All right, just need a number from you guys, okay?
Seven.
All right.
Oh!
All right, so the greatest number of children one woman has ever had. So what How many births, children, has a woman had? Or have you guys already done this?
I think we've done this on the podcast, haven't we?
I mean, if most we did, you should know the answer.
I was going to say 84.
80? What?
How many 84? Babies have come out of
84
one
babies.
Woman?
Well, I know
that
it's more than, what is it, 29 and counting?
More than me.
So I'm going to have two. So unless that's the record, and
I don't think you're gonna have two. I think
I made two happen.
Yes.
There you go.
So it's probably more than that.
Okay.
Okay.
I know that it's more than Duggar Lady.
Very.
Which
true.
I thought is what is it? 19, it was 19 kids and counting, but then she had two more, right? Three more. I'm gonna say 33.
All right.
Because you got to give your, you got to figure 33
Michael's
years.
Michael's doing math again.
I'm not doing math.
You start having kids at 16, one kid a year.
No. Well, yeah, one pregnancy a year.
Yeah, one pregnancy a year.
Twins and triplets and quadruplets.
There we go. Can't forget about those.
Yeah, no,
84.
The scariest thing my father's ever told me is multiples run in the family.
Right.
I'm going to stick to 30. What did I say?
33?
I'm going to up it to 35.
I'm just saying, nice.
Those two sets
the
of twins.
The two twins, yeah.
Yeah.
That's, by the way, as soon as we're done with your fact, I have a great twin story. Do not let me forget it. I'm going to tell on this podcast. Go ahead.
All right.
I'm going to say just an even 50.
All right. So one woman gave birth to 69 children.
69. Oh, 69.
Here's this. I
How
know.
Could I not have
you guys
69?
Will not forget this again. All right. She had 16 pairs of twins.
Okay.
Seven sets of triplets.
All right.
And four sets of quadruplets. All in a
Wait
span
a
of 40 years.
Hold
40
on a second.
Years?
That's what this woman said.
What?
I mean, I didn't speak to her personally.
Do that again. 16 sets. 16 sets of twins.
Correct.
Is 32.
All right. Seven sets of triplets.
Is 21.
All right. And four sets of quadruplets.
Is 16.
She probably had some singles in
there. That's all. No singles. That's what I thought was amazing.
Oh, because the triplets.
You did that quick.
You do all the. You do all those math. You do all the maths. Yeah, but that's the twins, triplets. She never had a single baby.
That seems
it was
bizarre.
Always a litter.
Always a litter.
Well, look, when you have 69 kids,
actually
you had
a woman,
litters.
And not just like a dog.
you confirmed that
not
she's
sure,
human.
But she was Russian between 1725 and 1765. 69 kids. So.
How do you even
Is it the same father?
Kids?
I didn't get that far. When I heard 69 kids, I stopped looking. That was nothing right. I wanted to know more about.
So 16, 7, and 4. Four is 37. So she had the kids in 37 years, roughly.
Apparently.
At the minimum would be over a period of 37 years.
I guess by the end of it, they were probably just walking out.
Yeah.
Like, see you later. Bye.
You think she strolls into the hospital? Hey, Alice, what's up?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Must.
No, you're in the same room. Go ahead.
Right. Yeah. No, it's the Alice room.
I don't think she ever left.
Yeah. So I have cousins who are twins, and this is one of the best stories ever. It was at my wedding. Okay. So we said, I know I'm
that's
selling this high. It's a
high
sale.
That's a high bar.
But I'm going to get there. So they are, I am physically the smallest member of my family. Okay. I am 6 foot tall, 220 pounds. And I am the smallest member of my family. Okay. The rest of my cousins are very large. So I have some, two cousins of mine that are twins. And everybody's sitting down at the wedding. And you know when you arrange wedding tables and stuff like that, you put different groups together. So we put like, we made a cousin's table. Okay, with a couple of our friends that were there. And they decided over the course of the evening to start introducing themselves to each other and how they know each other and that type of stuff. And my two twin cousins are sitting next to each other. First one says, my name's Chris. I'm Nick's cousin. I've known him from, you know, since I was born and we grew up together and blah, 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 blah. And the other cousin goes, my name's Alex. I met Nick in college. and we've been friends ever since. And one of Sarah's cousins was sitting at the other end of the table and goes, wait. I don't understand. Aren't the two of you twins? And my one cousin, deadpan expression on his face, he goes, what are you saying? All fat people look alike? And she's like, oh, God, no. And she like started going back and backpedaling. And everybody else at the table is just dying.
Aww.
Because of what they're going on.
I have been that woman a few drinks.
I think we've all said something. It's like, that's not what I meant.
So,
cool.
Yeah. Anyway.
Cool. Michael.
Yes.
Your turn.
Interesting facts. Okay. So. Forrest Gump.
Yes.
Forrest Gump has this amazing life.
Yep.
Meets Elvis.
Yes.
Okay. The recording that they used, they did not use Elvis's real voice, obviously, because it didn't really happen.
It did? Spoiler alert.
Sorry. The documentary gives it away. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Who was the voice of Elvis Presley?
Who pretended to be Elvis?
Who recorded over that recording for the purposes of being Elvis?
Nicolas Cage.
Not Nicolas Cage.
Johnny Cash.
Not Johnny Cash.
Oh, boy. Did Tom Hanks do it himself?
No.
Mike Myers.
Not Mike Myers. Ooh. It is somebody that has played Elvis and Elvis-like players and Elvis-like
personalities. Yeah, no, I was personalities trying to think of like somebody else.
Steve Martin.
Not Steve Martin.
Phil Hartman. Was he dead? No?
No, I don't think okay. so.
I don't know. I can't think of anybody who played Elvis.
If I give you the, I think if anybody's going to get it, I think it's going to be you.
I was going to say, when did this person play Elvis? Lead us there.
Early 1990s.
Yeah, it was.
That's when Forrest Gump came out.
Right. It was, what, 94, maybe?
Yeah, I believe like so.
Sounds right.
Sure, yeah.
He had also played an Elvis impersonator in 3,000 Miles to Graceland, if that helps at all.
Okay. It should, but it doesn't.
I have no, I'm out. Bye. Yeah.
Kurt Russell.
Kurt Russell.
Oh.
Okay. Kurt Russell was the singing voice of Elvis.
Right. So he did it as a favor to Robert Zemeckis, the director, but I'm pulling this from this GQ article where they interviewed him. It's uncredited, and it was this long-term rumor that was like, wait a minute.
It was him. It was Kurt Russell. It could be him. Yeah.
Right. So when he brings this up, like, I did it as a thing for Bob, who obviously Robert Zemeckis.
Right.
The original actor's voice didn't work out, so Robert Zemeckis called in a favor.
That would be kind of. I always want celebrity friends. Like, it'd be kind of cool to call somebody up, like, and just don't, like bullshit or like.
Don't
hey, you
have
a
couple? Like, you have.
Oh gosh. Okay, we're not getting into this. We don't need to get in Nick's celebrity.
I mean, real
people that he.
But it comes
kind of knows.
It comes in this block of the interview where he talks about the number of times that Elvis has kind of influenced his career.
Right.
Like, he was kind of in this dead part where he's like, I think I'm going to move to Colorado and maybe write some scripts or something along those lines. And then in 77, when Presley dies, he gets called for a television movie to play Elvis.
Okay.
And then it talks about the other times that he's played Elvis.
So there's just all of these overlap. There's a Forrest Gump-like strange overlap between Kurt Russell and Elvis throughout his entire life.
Exactly. So that's part of where the rumor came from. Even though it was an uncredited role, and it was just like, yeah, we're going to have Kurt Russell come up and come in to do it.
There you go.
So it was just this interesting. I'll post the full interview, obviously, in the link dump, but it was just like, okay, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
I would have never guessed it, and I didn't guess it.
It would have taken a while to get there.
Yeah. All right, cool. Everybody went, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Awesome. I want to talk about Samantha's career.
Okay.
So
you don't want a job in trivia, do you?
Right? Is this my interview and I don't know it?
Yeah. So I was over visiting her, and she was right at the, you know, Making of a Murderer height. And if you're ever going to watch Making of a Murderer, you should watch it with Samantha or a CSI. So she's a crime scene investigator.
Okay.
And Samantha, I want to talk about dead bodies.
All right.
I have one quick question, though. Do you ever take off your sunglasses really cool to Who songs?
Yeah. Right. Oh. Exactly. I always tell everyone it's just like TV without the stilettos. So.
I figure there's a lot more coveralls involved.
Just because I'm wearing them today in the studio.
Diverse. But no, tell us about kind of what you do, some crazy
and
stuff you've seen.
I think why. Like how, why and I, how more than what.
I was going to say how more than why. It's like, how do you get to that point?
It's a puzzle. All the pieces are there. And so just me and my friends and coworkers, it's just our job to work to put it back together. So.
Okay, but you do it just based on the forensic evidence. You
yes.
don't do any of, like, the investigating.
No.
Okay.
So, you know, every different department is different. So in Indianapolis, we have our police officers, our detectives, our investigators, things like that. And then we've got our forensics aspect of it. So,
okay.
Which is divided into a million different sectors.
So do you do
too.
The same kind of thing, like, in Dexter, where you just, like, have a room filled with, like, sheets where you just smash things in order to figure out how to copy the blood splatter?
So we don't do blood splatter, but, I mean, we definitely have to do, like, different testing things and try figuring... You know, different stuff out.
You have lots of rubber gloves and
oh my gosh.
Lots of Q-tips and what are the plastic vials?
That stuff is all true. That stuff is all very true. Lots of gloves.
Do you ever like swing by a CVS on the way into the office because you're like out of Q-tips?
No. Definitely not.
Okay. So but are you doing a lot of like, do you like sit down behind the other person's computer and have to like hack their password in order to get it in?
No.
No? You don't do any of the tech stuff?
I don't do any of that stuff. But there are individuals that do all that stuff. So.
Okay.
I mean, all the things that you've seen, we have all those resources available to us. Just I'm definitely not doing it. And that's probably one of the biggest things. So I was talking to Lindsay on the way here about, quote, the CSI effect. So just what that does to the population and in terms of like even like minus commercials. So
that was going to be my next question is how, well, it's not so much the effect itself, but how accurate are those shows as far even though they got to condense it, and obviously.
Yeah, but. I mean, don't get me wrong. I still love watching them. I watch Making a Murderer with Lens. You know, obviously there's...
She gets fired up. Specifically the one with the key. And the then
keys!
The, and then the blood vial that had the hole in it. And you're like, that would never happen. And she's like kind of starting to twitch a little bit. she's like, that is just unprecedented. It's that true. Is not procedure. She's just freaking out.
So what is your wheelhouse?
So I do actual scene work. So responding to scenes. And, you know, my job is to document and preserve the scene as well as... process it and collect it and get it back to the lab.
Okay.
But then once
so
back
your
the
collection
lab,
and logistics.
To a degree, yeah. You know, and then once we get back to the lab, we've got our finger people, we've got our firearms people, we've got our drug people.
Wait, our finger people?
Fingerprint.
Oh, fingerprint people. I'm like, do you have people that, is there really that many like disembodied like digits lying around?
It's a big room with different desks. So, you know, Steve's the finger guy and Dave's the toe guy.
Yeah,
and...
no, but that's what I was finger guy. I'm like, you have like a pointer finger guy and like a middle finger guy?
No, and that goes into the CSI effect too of, it takes so many of us. In these cases, you know, I mean, it takes so much hard work from so many different groups and agencies and everything. So, I mean, it's not one person's job by any means. Aviators are not.
I have one very, very specific question.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
How long does a DNA test really take? Because it's not the 2 minutes
it's not
on the screen.
Yeah.
No. Don't get me wrong. There's definitely, like, DNA backlogs in the country, you know. But
from it hitting the system, I guess, is how long till... Is that something you can answer? Or?
I don't even know. Like okay. I said, you know, I know the process and, you know, its need and how it's used, but
sure.
I'm definitely not doing it. So okay. I don't want to vouch for that.
How do you prevent the smell? Like, what do you do to stop the smell? Is it Silence of the Lambs where you put stuff under your nose?
No, I never have personally. I mean, I don't know.
I kind of like it.
Not necessarily that, but I don't know. It doesn't bother me, like, necessarily. I don't know. Or I'm so focused on the job I'm doing that... I don't know. It doesn't get me too much, so don't get me wrong. I'll regret saying that here when I get back to work. But,
hey, we heard you on the podcast. Smell this.
Right? But no, I mean, you know, and here we are like semi-laughing about it, but I mean, it's such, you know, we remember who we're doing it for, you know, stuff like that. Right. So for sure.
Well, yeah,
so,
parts of them are in front of you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, hey,
come on,
we're here to get those... guys and girls out there, so
yeah,
that's great.
Do you have any like stories that stand out? It's like, oh, I was doing this scene and this kind of a thing happened.
Oh, I mean, I don't know. We all remember, you know, our hardest ones, our craziest ones, and different things like that. I mean, our long ones and different things like that. So, I mean,
was there ever one where you like walked onto the scene and you're like, that guy did it?
Like, no.
Just it's this and this and this. That guy did it. Just
and
go get him right now.
To the best part, I think that's what I love for me personally is not being on the investigative aspect. That I get to come in and testify to fact. I get to say, this is what I did on this day, you know, and luckily, you know, there's expert witnesses.
You don't have to
like
put
that.
This together with that.
No.
That. Okay. But it's never been like so blatantly obvious. Like you see a picture of a person and you're like, that guy did it.
I haven't had a note of someone holding it say, I did it.
Okay.
You can find me at this address yet.
All right.
But if they want to start doing that, I'm sure
it
all of our detectives
so
would be
much
stoked,
easier.
Right?
Yeah.
But.
You know, I can tell you when that happens, though. It's usually the 50-minute mark of any given television show.
Yeah,
it's like,
right.
We don't have a clue. Oh, here's his address.
The music starts amping up. So, all right. I'll be listening for it.
Right after the montage.
Do you wear headphones when you're like doing your collections and stuff or like no, you should. You should have all this like inspiration.
I was gonna say, what is the soundtrack for working a crime scene?
I think it's a lot of Who, isn't it?
It's I know four of them are Who songs.
Yeah.
So, oh, so it's awesome. But,
so and then just dramatic instrumental like raising in a crescendo.
Yeah.
Like it starts going up and you start like being hyper like looking around, you're like, it's around here somewhere, I can tell, because the music just got interesting.
It's like the Jumanji sound that starts, like, amping up the closer you get.
Yeah, exactly.
What was it in Sarah Marshall? It's just ominous tones.
Right.
Ominous tones.
Yeah.
Cool. What's her phrase?
Ominous tones.
Ominous tones.
Yeah.
Cool. Easy peasy. And I also, I really got to stop saying things. Woo, off the game. I need some guac. Let's go get some drinks. Samantha, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah.
This has been the We Don't Know Either podcast. I'm Lindsay.
I'm Nick.
I'm Michael.
I'm Samantha.
We don't know either.
Bye.